Hey, everybody. Welcome to Sound Off 89 here on SCScoops.com. It is Sunday, November 15, 2009. I am the Solemn Monster here with you and with a case of pharyngitis, so bear with me here. I've got a bit of a sore throat and some other nasty things built up inside me, so we'll try to get through it, though. No show last weekend, so obviously I had to be back here with another one this week and have a couple of big pieces of news to talk about. It's one of those weekends where I'm actually happy I waited until Sunday instead of doing the podcast on a Saturday, as I've been doing the last couple of weeks, because there was some pretty major news that broke last night, and since I didn't see anybody else report on it, I'll give full credit for it to Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer. He's actually over in the UK right now, as he flew in for the UFC 105 event last night. Which featured Randy Couture just barely edging Brandon Vera in the main event. That, of course, aired on Spike TV shortly before the event went to air, or maybe right around the time that it did. The news was posted. It was kind of a three-pronged news story in that there were three big pieces of news that Meltzer had reported on. And really, it all dealt with UFC. But there's two pretty big wrestling tie-ins here. The first, of course, concerns Brock Lesnar. Now, Brock Lesnar obviously is a former WWE champion and is the reigning UFC undisputed heavyweight champion. Lesnar was originally supposed to fight Shane Carwin for the title on November 21st, which would be next weekend in Vegas at the UFC 106 pay-per-view. And that was going to be the big money fight. I'm sure WWE was expecting to get trounced yet again by UFC this month. This was an event that most people predicted would probably bring in over a million buys. I mean, Brock Lesnar is the biggest box office draw, certainly right up there with the likes of Mayweather and Pacquiao as far as boxing is concerned, that there is. Lesnar is big box office, and the Survivor Series, of course, is coming up. Oh, my God, is the Survivor Series next weekend already? I think it is. Survivor Series is next Sunday, which means UFC 106 would have been the night before. That was bad news for the Survivor Series, and I still think Survivor Series is not going to do great, but the fight was called off and postponed because Lesnar had been suffering from what he had believed to be a pretty bad case of the flu. The only thing is, it was going on for about 3 or 4 weeks. And I've never actually had the flu in my life, but I'm fairly certain that the flu does not last a month unless you have other underlying issues. And it was revealed about a week or two back that, in fact, he had been diagnosed with mono, which is no fun at all. I've had that before. And as a fighter, it's just terrible because Brock, of course, the reason the fight had to be postponed, not just because he was feeling ill, but because he could not train, at least not train up to his standards for the fight. And somebody with mono, it takes months for you to get back to feeling yourself. So he still hasn't been able to shake the illness. Once he does, it's going to be even longer before he can begin training and come back to fight. That was bad enough news for UFC, but they were hoping that perhaps Brock and Carwin could have their fight, I believe January 2nd is the big New Year's show for UFC. And if not, then maybe in March or April. And that was the plan, and those plans have now gone out the window because it was reported that Brock is in much, much worse shape than he had been letting on. Apparently, he went to Canada last week to try to get away from everything and get some rest, get better, and at some point, he collapsed and was rushed to the hospital. He does have mono. As I said, that was confirmed. But apparently, Brock has something else that he has requested confidentiality on. He does not want whatever else it is that he has to get out publicly. And it may at some point, but for now, as is his right, that's being kept mum by Brock and UFC. You know, they promised him to keep the disease private, but As far as everybody knows, it's not cancer, and it's not AIDS. Obviously, that still leaves the pretty broad question of exactly what's wrong with Brock. Whatever it is, it's very, very serious. There's at least two things wrong, maybe more. There's been some talk that perhaps his career could be over. I think that talk would certainly be premature, but if whatever it is that he has does not get taken care of in a timely manner, this could have serious long-term effects on Lesnar's, not only his career, but his life. So that's pretty serious stuff right there. And, you know, you could sit here and speculate on what it is just based on the way they're describing his symptoms. You know, Brock has been really run down and tired. He just cannot get his energy about him. And I mean, that could be from any number of things. I mean, you could talk about that. I mean, there's been discussion about maybe hepatitis. There's been discussion about maybe a heart condition. There's been discussion perhaps of MS, you know, multiple sclerosis. I mean, which would obviously be devastating. All of that is speculation on my part, on everyone else's part. Whatever it is, it's not getting out, but Brock is in bad, bad shape. They're trying to get him into the Mayo Clinic, which is one of the most renowned hospitals in the country. And that right there tells you all you need to know, that there's something wrong with this guy. He's not going to be fighting for a long, long time. I would imagine that at some point UFC may have to consider taking the title off him and crowning an interim champion. But and certainly for their pay-per-view business, it's just devastating because Brock was their champ. He was their biggest draw. And it's going to cost UFC quite a bit of money, although all of that stuff, of course, is inconsequential when it comes to the man's health. This sounds like scary stuff, and I certainly hope that Brock can make it out okay, even if he doesn't fight for another year. You know, as long as he can get better, you know, that's really all that matters. I know he just had another child recently. It's just a rough time for Brock. So that was the big news that broke last night. The other big news relative to UFC is that, ironically, one of the replacement fights that had been signed really to replace Lesnar versus Carwin on that January 2nd show at UFC 108 was Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira against Cain Velasquez. And apparently Nogueira now has a very serious staph infection. And his fight with Velasquez is off. And so tough time for UFC right now. WWE has been through the same thing before. You know, they've had periods of time where a whole bunch of main eventers go down at once with an injury, and it sucks. Whether it's, you know, whether it's a real sport or a fake sport, it's really inconsequential when it's your top guys going down left and right due to injury or other issues. It sucks, and it's just something UFC is going to have to get through. Thank God for them. They've been doing big business now for a long time, and I think they'll be okay. It's just going to be a rough period for them heading into the new year. Now, the third piece of news, which, again, I'll credit Meltzer on this because I really have not seen anybody else talk about this, but apparently it was confirmed to him that Shane McMahon did in fact have a meeting at UFC offices recently. Dana White, when he was asked about that for more information, simply responded with a no comment. Now that obviously is potentially huge news. That's not to say that if Shane got in bed with UFC, he would be, you know, in a great position of power like a Dana White. I don't know if he'd be going in as a partner. I don't know. Again, all speculation. We know that there was a meeting, and that's all we know. And again, it's just that, a meeting. Just because somebody has a meeting doesn't mean anything comes from that meeting. But I think it's just very interesting that Shane would even meet with UFC at all. I might have even said on this podcast several weeks ago when the Shane story first broke and everybody was speculating about where he may be going and what he may be doing. You know, I talked about maybe Shane getting into MMA because he is a big MMA fan. I don't remember. I'm pretty sure that I had put the potential for a Shane UFC relationship to bed by saying that it was not going to happen. And if I did say that, then and something comes from this, then I guess I was wrong. Because I still would be shocked. I mean, Shane meeting with UFC is one thing. Of course, him actually signing some sort of deal with them is another thing, and that hasn't happened yet. Whatever's going to happen likely would not happen until after the first of the year, because Shane is still technically a WWE employee until December 31st or January 1st, whatever it is. I would imagine that shortly after the new year, whatever Shane's going to do, there'll be a big announcement for it. So it's still going to be another month and a half or so before we know, but I still would be very surprised if Shane went to UFC. I just feel like it would be a slap in the face to his father. Maybe that's what he wants. I don't know. you know, Vince can talk all he wants about UFC not being competition to WWE, but clearly they're taking away WWE pay-per-view dollars, eyeballs, and it's a big issue for WWE. And for Shane McMahon to sign with the competition, quote-unquote, would be a huge slap in the face to WWE. So let's see how this all shakes out, but it can be confirmed that Shane met with them recently. That's all we know right now. Potentially huge news, but right now that's all it is potentially huge news. Let's talk about Raw a little bit from last week. Raw from the UK with Ricky Hatton as the special guest host. I'm not a big boxing fan. I know of Ricky Hatton, but I really don't care about Ricky Hatton. So if you're a Brit, sorry. The guy doesn't do much for me. And quite frankly, I thought I've seen worse guest hosts that they've brought in. Believe me, I have. But Ricky Hatton, I mean, talk about a guy completely devoid of charisma. And you know what? He's got that thick accent. And I don't know what part of the country he's from. You know, I'm a fan, for example, of British comedy and all that, and it's not like I can't understand them, but for whatever reason, maybe because he's not only got the English accent, but because he is a boxer and he's probably got some brain damage going on there, I could barely understand what he was saying half the time, you know, but then again, whenever Evander Holyfield speaks, I could barely understand what he's saying too, so maybe it is a boxing thing, but that didn't help. Some of the jokes that he was cracking went way over my head, his delivery was poor. Not my favorite guest host, you know, but whatever, it was what it was. I still, am kind of shocked that they actually had a boxer versus wrestler match and just used it for total comedy on the show because, you know, Hatton is a legit WWE fan and, you know, the Big Show, Shaquille O'Neal stuff was pretty cool when they did that on Raw and then they didn't follow it up at all. So they made Big Show look like a joke. This, they could have done a similar thing with this, not necessarily with Big Show, but with anybody. They could have had a serious angle on Raw, you know, because I don't know if they would have been able to get Hatton on a pay-per-view. You know, we could sit here and go, well, how come WWE didn't try to make money off it? Well, maybe Ricky Hatton didn't want to do a pay-per-view match, but they certainly could have done something more serious with him and one of their top guys or mid-card guys to help elevate them on Raw instead of a freaking comedy match against Chavo Guerrero. So I thought that was a bit of a waste because apparently, this is what I read, Hatton is one of the biggest draws ever in the UK as a boxer, you know, on pay-per-view and in terms of all that, even more so than Floyd Mayweather here in the US. And number one, that boggles my mind because Hatton may be the best fighter in the world for all I know, but again, he completely lacks charisma. And history would tell us that whether you're the best fighter or boxer or wrestler in the world or not, pound for pound, if you are an entertaining character with a personality and you can sell your fights and you've got charisma, you know, that's what will get you over. And this guy has none of that. I mean, he's a great fighter, fine, but I don't know. He bored me, you know, but I guess apparently he's a big draw in the UK. So they should have done more with him, but they didn't. And whatever, what's done is done. God, what is it? This just for the record, this was not a Raw show that I liked. You know, these shows lately have been hit or miss. This was a miss, I think, at least narrowly. There were some good stuff on the show, but I don't know. I couldn't get into it. I tried, but I couldn't get into it. You know, Evan Bourne defeating Jack Swagger. Good for Evan Bourne. It's good to see him get a win. But so much for the Jack Swagger undefeated streak, which was stupid to begin with, because if Jack Swagger is such a badass and thinks he's hot shit, why would you turn around a couple of weeks ago and say, well, I promise you that I'm going to be undefeated for the next 2 months. Well, why not just turn around and say, you know what? I'm going to be undefeated, period. Why just be undefeated for the rest of 2009? You know, that just sounded stupid to me from the very beginning. Of course, it doesn't matter now because the streak is over. They're building heat between Miz and Swagger. I'm intrigued by it. I thought, you know, Miz is great. Miz has really just become a great guy. And you know, I'm curious to see where they go with this Miz-Swagger-Eve Torres stuff. Maybe they got actual long-term booking going on here. One of my more, and I know people will disagree with me on this, but one of the things I enjoyed most about the show was at least the beginning of the VIP lounge with MVP Mark Henry and Kofi Kingston. Now, obviously, it degenerated into something that a lot of people didn't like. There was a lot of racial overtones, big shock. It's not something we've never seen before in WWE. I could do without the racial overtones, too. It didn't bother me as much as it bothered other people because maybe I just have come to expect this. I've seen it so many times before, not just in WWE, but in wrestling in general, that it doesn't surprise me anymore. What I took away from this segment was something I think many of us already knew, and that is that Kofi Kingston, whatever it is, he's got it. I mean, Kofi, since he dropped the goofy accent and they've given him more promo time, has really impressed me a lot. He's just a natural on the microphone. He doesn't come off as nervous or rehearsed. He's very smooth and believable. He showed a lot of fire and intensity a couple of weeks ago. You know, in this feud with Orton so far, when he has to, he shows a lot of fire, a lot of intensity. And, you know, maybe he needs – I actually like his theme music, but I agree with other people that have said that if he dropped the whole Jamaican thing, he should probably get new music too. That would probably – complete the package. I like what they're doing with Orton and Kingston. I like the fact that they haven't given away that singles match yet. They teased it last week, but we didn't actually get the match. And that they're doing captain teams at Survivor Series. Now, I fully expect that Orton's going to win, or Orton's team will win. You know, maybe they'll do a situation where it comes down to Kofi and two or three guys on the legacy side, but ultimately Orton wins. I think that's the way it probably should go. And then logic would dictate that it would lead to a singles match on pay-per-view, maybe in December at TLC. We'll see where they go with that. But I'm liking Kofi. Kofi's my guy now on Raw. I mean, I like what they're doing with him. I'm optimistic that they'll be able to push him and get him to that next level and keep him there and not knock him back down. But I know history would dictate otherwise. Jack Swagger's a great example of somebody that came over from ECW where he probably should have stayed. And he just got completely buried and lost in the shuffle on Raw. So we'll see what they do with Kofi. But I like that segment just because I like the interplay back and forth, at least until the three men with no pants came out. And then it kind of went downhill a little bit. Let's see. Ah, yes, I remember what I wanted to talk about now. John Cena and DX. Now, I posted on my Twitter page. I did some live Raw blogging last week. So if you're not logged on to my Twitter, twitter.com/Solomonster, get your ass on there because I will break out into some entertaining live blogging during these shows sometimes. Monday night was one of those nights. And I mentioned that, actually, I'll bring it up right now. I've got the Twitter page open here, twitter.com/Solomonster. And I believe for this segment, I said, right, and I quote, "While this has been by far the worst build to a title match on pay-per-view, I did enjoy that little segment with John Swaggle, Cena, and DX." Now, allow me to defend myself. A lot of the comedy that we see on these shows, especially when it involves DX, is really campy and really stupid. I actually laughed a couple of times during this segment. You know, there was one point where Shawn Michaels went off screen, and John Cena was like, "Well, what did he just say?" And Triple H, in a very flippant way, just said, "Don't worry about it. Nobody knows what he's talking about. Nobody ever knows what he says." And I just laughed. I thought it was just, the way he delivered it, it was really funny. I was okay with the segment for what it was. As a segment to promote a triple threat main event match on pay-per-view. And by the way, this is really the main event of Survivor Series. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they'll put the Undertaker match on last, but this really is your main event. And it's been played for total comedy. There is absolutely nobody listening to this podcast right now that could possibly take this match seriously. There is no possible way that anybody could look at this match and take it seriously. And it's your pay-per-view main event for your main championship on your main flagship brand. It really makes you shake your head. You know, and they wonder why their pay-per-view buy rates are taking a nosedive. The SummerSlam numbers came in, and they were atrocious. It was down something like 30% from last year's show, which even then was not a good buy rate. And they wonder why. And it's a shame, in a way, because Survivor Series over the last several years has become a throwaway show. You know, people still like to talk about the big four: Rumble, Mania, SummerSlam, and Survivor Series. And of those four, Survivor Series is most like any other pay-per-view now. It's almost like the big three. Because when was the last time something really, truly special happened at Survivor Series? When was the last time a Survivor Series was so well promoted it felt like a big show? Maybe the Elimination Chamber back in 2002 when Shawn Michaels won, you know? That's a long time ago. That really is a long time ago. And anyway, this has just been horrific build-up. They've got 1 week left to make something happen to get people interested in this match. Maybe they will. Maybe the big angle they're saving for Raw. And it's kind of like UFC and boxing, where it doesn't matter what you do in the weeks leading up to the fight. The only thing that matters is what happens the week of. That's all that people are going to remember. And all right, maybe that's true. Maybe that is true. But whatever they're going to do, they better do it fast, because I could give two shits about this match. And I mean, look, I complained about the fact that we got a match yet again that we've seen a million times. Yes, we've never actually seen a triple threat with all three guys in the ring, but we've seen enough of John Cena and Triple H, and even John Cena and Shawn Michaels, who I think can work well together, but still, we've seen it before. You know, there's nothing fresh. And so it's bad enough we get a rehash of matches we've seen before yet again in another pay-per-view main event, but now that they've turned it into a joke, you know, and it begs the question, where are they going with the Hornswoggle stuff? Do they actually have a long-term plan, like with Miz and Swagger and Eve? or is this really just a week-by-week comedy thing that they come up with? You know, because the way they're playing it out, I almost feel like Hornswoggle is going to turn heel on DX. And maybe Hornswoggle, and this is purely my idea, so I'll take credit for this idea if it ever happens, which I'm sure it won't. But what's been going through my head in watching all of these segments is, you know, ultimately Hornswoggle turns heel on DX and is put in a position to be a manager. And, of course, Hornswoggle would have to drop the shtick that he can't talk, because we all know he can. I mean, I've heard you know, Dylan, which is his real name, do interviews before, and he talks like a normal guy. And maybe they'll, you know, allow him to drop the shtick and actually make him a mouthpiece. I know, you know, he's a little person, so what? I think, you know, I actually wouldn't have any problem with that at all. I think Hornswoggle is a heel. You know, managing some guys to go after DX or something could get him a lot of heat. You know, and let's be honest here. I mean, ultimately, in any feud like that, if Hornswoggle is a heel manager for somebody, who wouldn't want to see the babyface do some midget tossing? I mean, come on, you know? Anyway, I doubt that's what they're planning on doing. So if that's not the case, I have no fucking clue what they're doing with Hornswoggle. But it's one thing if you're going to use him on the show with Chavo for comedy, which is tired enough as it is. And by the way, little detour here for a second, if I may. And I posted this again on my Twitter blog, but they're coming out with a Best of Raw 2009 DVD at the end of the year. And it begs the question, is this going to be the first ever DVD set that WWE puts out that has three blank discs, okay? Because I can count on one hand the quote-unquote best moments of Raw from 2009. Okay, so, I mean, that's a joke to begin with, but it's a DVD that I'm sure will be filled with Hornswoggle Chavo segments, so I'll have to skip on that purchase. But anyway, it's one thing to use Hornswoggle in those types of segments. Unless they're going somewhere with this, and I don't think they are, why the fuck is Hornswoggle being involved in your main championship feud on your main brand? Is it any wonder why this show is pulling in a 3 rating now? Is it any wonder why these pay-per-views suck in terms of the people that actually buy them? And they send out surveys. They have focus groups. They do research, WWE does, asking fans, why are you not watching the shows anymore? I get these surveys all the time. Why are you not ordering the pay-per-view? Please choose from all that apply. And they give you a laundry list of reasons. One of the reasons is not midget involved in main feud. Maybe it should be. So, yeah, the segment was kind of funny, but guess what? It didn't achieve the goal, which should be to promote your pay-per-view main event, so sucks to be them. Anyway, yeah, this show, you know, the main event, I didn't really pay much attention to it. I kind of dozed off, and when I woke up to find out that a big main event had been signed for next week, which actually made me very happy, because I have tickets to Raw next week. I will be going to Madison Square Garden. I will be at Raw on Monday night at MSG. And I will apparently be seeing a main event, a triple threat tag team main event, pitting DX, yet again, against Jericho, yet again, against the team of John Cena and The Undertaker. Sounds like a pretty big main event, and like I said, they've got 1 week left to make me care about this main event on the pay-per-view. I'm looking forward to it more so just because I'll be there live, and anytime you get to see The Undertaker make his entrance live is really cool. I was at a SmackDown taping at MSG in April, and The Undertaker was not there. That was right after WrestleMania, actually about a month after WrestleMania. But he was not there, and I was very disappointed. So I'm looking forward to it. The show is always more enjoyable live. in part because you don't have to listen to Michael Cole. So right off the bat, I can guarantee you that I'm going to love Raw like 10 million times more this week than I did last week. So I should be in a happier mood on the next sound off. But yeah, it's a big main event. And it was also announced that Rowdy Roddy Piper would be the guest host for Raw. So not only do I get a big main event, but I get an actual wrestling guest host instead of one of these shitty celebrities. So that makes me happy too. Yes, it was supposed to be Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan was offered the gig by Vince McMahon before Hogan signed with TNA, and it would have made total sense. I mean, you could not have come up with a more perfect time to use Hulk Hogan. It's Madison Square Garden. Hogan's book just came out, so he can promote that. And WWE just released a new Hulk Hogan DVD set this week. Actually, it's coming out on Tuesday. So this would have been the perfect opportunity for Hogan to host, and obviously he is not going to, and that disappoints me because, you know, it would have been nice for me to see Hogan live. I think the last time I saw Hulk Hogan live was probably 1991 at a house show. It was him and I think, who was it? I don't know. I know Sergeant Slaughter was involved. It was some kind of tag match. So that was a long time ago. But, oh well. I guess I'll have to wait. But I'm looking forward to Raw Monday night. It should be a big show. And on the subject of Raw this coming Monday night, while I'm talking about it, I got a call yesterday from my good buddy Noah Mark. And we were shooting the shit about wrestling and how much things suck right now. And he wanted me to mention this specifically on the podcast. And if he's listening right now, hopefully he is, because I know he's missed the last couple of sound-offs. You know, he's been busy doing other things, apparently. But he wanted me to mention that everybody listening who watches Raw Monday night should play the Noah Mark Raw Drinking Game. And this is a drinking game that specifically applies to Raw for Madison Square Garden this week. And it's very simple. Anytime Michael Cole, or really either of the announcers, but let's be honest, it'll be Michael Cole, mentions the words "World's Most Famous Arena," in reference, of course, to MSG, feel free to down two or three shots of your favorite drink. Anytime Michael... Oh, by the way, that reminds me. Raw is getting a new video and music tomorrow night, I believe. It's that Burn It to the Ground song by Nickelback. And, wow, that's going to be interesting. So when Raw goes on the air tomorrow night, it'll have a completely new, fresh open. So that should be interesting. Anyway, back to the drinking game. Anytime you hear World's Most Famous Arena, Madison Square Garden, New York City, greatest fans in the world, so on and so forth, any of those buzzwords and those catchphrases, feel free to drink yourself into oblivion. It'll make the show that much more enjoyable. And what other terms? I forgot all the other terms. You'll hear them. Believe me, you're going to hear them on commentary. They're being scripted into the show as we speak tomorrow night. And by the midway through the show, you'll all be completely annoyed. But I won't be, because I won't have to put up with Michael Cole on commentary. So, haha. Anyway, should be a good show tomorrow night. Now, I want to backtrack a little bit here and talk about SmackDown, which I didn't see. But I do know that there was an Undertaker-Chris Jericho match, and I could sit here and bitch and moan about the fact that they would give us this first time ever one-on-one encounter in the 10 years that these guys have been in the company together. We've never seen Chris Jericho against The Undertaker. We've talked about it before that it could have been a WrestleMania match. It may well still be a WrestleMania match if Edge can't come back in time. I mean, they could still do it. It won't be their first encounter, but they could certainly still do the match. Since the, I believe the match on Friday did not have an actual conclusion. But, you know, still, I could sit here and bitch about that, but I won't, because we all know that that's true. They probably should have saved the match for a special occasion and not a throwaway match on TV to promote a shitty pay-per-view. But we did get the match. From what I've heard, it was really, really good, and I've got it loaded up right now on YouTube, two parts, high-quality shit. As soon as this podcast is over, I'm going to watch it. So I will see the Jericho-Undertaker match. I don't think anything else of any real note happened on SmackDown, so I'm not going to bother watching the whole thing. But I will watch the Jericho match right after I'm done recording this show. Let's see here. Some other guest hosts coming up. Oh, by the way, I did read that apparently WWE tried to get Jimmy Fallon of NBC to do the Raw show tomorrow night. Thank fucking Christ! There was a scheduling conflict, and Jimmy Fallon won't be there. Oh, I'm so devastated by that news. I don't know how anybody could find Jimmy Fallon funny. He'll have a joke every now and then, but he just looks so nervous. and so uncomfortable and so out of place hosting his own show. You know, SNL, he was fine. He served his purpose. I don't find him funny at all. If Jimmy Fallon would have been selected to host the Raw from Madison Square Garden after having not been able to get Hulk Hogan, that would have been a huge letdown. I am so happy that Roddy Piper got the nod over Jimmy Fallon. I could do cartwheels. When I heard that, I was just mortified by the prospect that we almost got Jimmy Fallon as the Raw guest host. I know he has wrestlers on his show, and you know, if they want to have him host sometime in the future, fine. But not the show that I'm going to, please. But apparently Mark Cuban is, I believe, December 7th there in Texas, and that he, maybe not Texas, maybe they're in, well, wherever the hell they're going to be. Mark Cuban is hosting Raw, I believe, on December 7th, and on December 14th, and by the way, Mark Cuban, the last time he would have been on WWE TV, I believe was at the Survivor Series in 03, and he got an RKO by Randy Orton, so there you go. December 14th is the three-hour Raw special. From Corpus Christi, Texas, Dennis Miller will be hosting the 2009 Slammy Awards. So that should be interesting. And, wait a minute. That's the three-hour Raw. I think we have a three-hour Raw coming up next week, as a matter of fact. I believe the Raw after Survivor Series on November 23rd is also a three-hour Raw. Coming off a pay-per-view, no. Oh, wow. That sucks for the writers, let me tell you. To have to write back-to-back, basically back-to-back pay-per-view shows, if you think about it. And then they have to script another 6 hours of, oh, man. Sucks to be on the creative team, let me tell you. But what are you going to do? Latest news regarding the WWE Hall of Fame and prospective inductees for 2010. There was a meeting with the writing team and Vince McMahon on the corporate jet to Sheffield, England this past week. And obviously nothing is definite, and whatever they're talking about now is completely irrelevant, because the Hall of Fame is Vince McMahon's decision ultimately, and he'll change his mind 5 million times between now and then. So take all of this under consideration with that knowledge in mind. But the names that Vince McMahon this past week seemed to like the most were Ted DiBiase, which completely makes sense. He should have been in already. His name comes up every year. It's not that anybody doesn't like him. It's just Vince has wanted to wait until the time was right. I think the time is right, and they could even have his son induct him. So the Million Dollar Man, I think, is quite frankly a shoo-in for the Hall of Fame this year. King Kong Bundy is under consideration, which I'm completely fine with. And, you know, Bundy was a big main event player. He wasn't a champion in WWF, but he main evented a WrestleMania against Hulk Hogan. He competed in world class, you know, before that. So he made his way around. And Bundy apparently now is doing stand-up comedy and has hair. And just if for no other reason, to be able to see King Kong Bundy with hair doing stand-up comedy jokes at the Hall of Fame, he should absolutely go in this year. Lawrence Taylor is another name. He would, I guess, go into that infamous celebrity wing of the Hall of Fame, although Lawrence Taylor got arrested this week, I think, for hit and run. So he may not be going to the Hall of Fame after all. And Jake Roberts, which is a dicey one, because if you ask me, should Jake the Snake Roberts be in the Hall of Fame, my answer is yes, absolutely. Jake Roberts was a great wrestler. As a technical wrestler in the ring, was he the greatest? No. But as a wrestler, as the total package, as a character, as a promo, there was nobody better. Nobody mastered psychology the way that Jake Roberts did. He would talk very low, because he wanted to make people listen to him. Chris Jericho does that a lot now too. You talk low. You don't shout like a gorilla, like a monster, because anybody can do that, you know. But by talking very low and keeping your voice very soft, you know, it forces people to listen to what you're saying. And you know, I grew up on that late 80s, early 90s WWF, and Jake was unique in that respect, because there really weren't too many people doing what he did, and he really came off more so as a heel. I mean, Jake was very over as a babyface, but as a heel, there was none better. I mean, I'll go down as saying that my favorite all-time feud was probably Macho Man and Jake the Snake, and it was short-lived. It never really had a real conclusion the way that it should have, but that was one hell of a feud that seems so out of place now looking back on it, because, you know, in that cartoon kiddie era of WWF, this was a pretty hardcore, serious angle. And I know they edited it off the Macho Man DVD, but when they showed that Tuesday in Texas thing, they edited off the part where Jake Roberts smacked Elizabeth in the face, which, you know, obviously is not something I condone, but, I mean, goddamn if that didn't make that feud, take that feud to another level. I mean, and Jake was just absolutely loathed and despised. Macho Man, of course, went crazy. It was great, great, great stuff, and I'll always remember Jake for that. He should absolutely go into the Hall of Fame. Whether or not he's reliable and you know, if you can keep him away from things that he should probably be kept away from at the ceremony and all that, that's something for WWE to worry about. But if you're asking me, should Jake go in, I say yes, absolutely. Obviously, a lot of people talking about the possibility of the Ultimate Warrior going into the Hall of Fame, which a lot of people are shocked by, you know. Oh, that'll never happen. Hell will freeze over before that happens. I don't know why people are saying that. You know, they say never in the wrestling business for a reason. There was, you know, once upon a time, Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon were estranged from one another, but they did business. You know, the Road Warriors. Hawk, I mean, is legendary in his hate for Vince McMahon, and yet, you know, LOD showed up on Raw back in 03, it was, I believe, looking for a job, you know. Time heals all wounds. Now, Warrior and WWE have been involved in litigation up until recently that was resolved. I believe WWE won, or at least Warrior lost, whatever the terms of the case was. And the judge ruled that Warrior would have to pay all of WWE's legal expenses as well to add insult to injury. Now, what's interesting about all this is that this past week, and by the way, that decision came down within the last couple of weeks. This past week, it was revealed that WWE had filed a motion that essentially would have excused Warrior from having to pay their legal fees. I believe it's a dismissal with prejudice is what they call it. And I find that to be very interesting, because why would WWE be doing that? Perhaps they've already reached some sort of an agreement. You know, WrestleMania is in Phoenix, which is Warrior's hometown. I don't really care, quite frankly, where Warrior lives. I think even Jim Ross mentioned this in his blog. The notion that Warrior is going to go into the Hall of Fame just because it's being brought to his home state is just fucking stupid. It doesn't matter where Warrior is from. If they can come to an agreement, he'll go into the Hall of Fame. If he has to fly somewhere, he'll fly somewhere. It doesn't mean... Who gives a shit if Warrior lives in Phoenix? What does that have to do with anything? You know, I mean, if they want him in the Hall of Fame, they'll talk to him. They'll come to an agreement. It'll get Warrior publicity. Don't think for a second he wouldn't like to go into the Hall of Fame, despite all the shit that he's talked about Vince McMahon. A lot of people talk a lot of shit about Vince McMahon and end up making an appearance on TV at some point as a guest host or in the Hall of Fame or doing this or doing that. You know, it's just the way it is. So if Warrior goes into the Hall of Fame, it would not shock me at all. In fact, I expect him to go into the Hall of Fame next year because he has a lot to gain from it, and so does WWE, because they're running out of top-flight names to use in the Hall of Fame. God bless Ted DiBiase, but he's not on the same level in terms of notoriety as a Hulk Hogan or an Ultimate Warrior. And as far as Randy Savage is concerned, I mean, look, if WWE can make up with Warrior, it's possible that at some point they can make up with Randy Savage, but that's for Vince McMahon to decide. Randy Savage is still on the shit list. He's not going into the Hall of Fame anytime soon. So if you don't put Warrior in, who are you going to put in? You know, Shawn Michaels is not going in probably until he's retired. Undertaker's not going in until he's retired. Triple H isn't going in until he's retired. Steve Austin is already in. The Rock is not ready to go in. Mick Foley is never going to go in unless he leaves TNA. Sting may go in, but he's in TNA, so they've got a big problem if they don't, you know, if they don't slow things down a little bit. I've been an advocate for cutting the number of people they put in the Hall of Fame each year in half. Why do you have to always put in 7 or 8 people? You know, I mean, look at the Baseball Hall of Fame. Usually they'll put 2 or 3 people in a year. Why can't WWE put 4 people, 3 or 4 people in the Hall of Fame? Highlight those 3 or 4 people. Give them more time to talk instead of rushing them off the stage at the Hall of Fame ceremony. I know they moved the Hall of Fame ceremony up to, I think, 4 o'clock in the afternoon is when they're going to tape it, which is a step in the right direction. They probably should just have the friggin' thing on Friday night, but they're having it that Saturday before WrestleMania in the afternoon. So hopefully they'll have plenty of time to give these people to talk instead of rushing them off the stage like they rushed Ric Flair and Steve Austin off the stage, which was ridiculous. But that's where the Hall of Fame stands right now. If the past is any indication, we'll probably hear about the first name, whoever the first inductee is going to be, probably right after the Royal Rumble, so we still have some time for Vince McMahon to, of course, change his mind. Jim Ross is getting better. He's home, taking care of himself, and posted an update on his blog yesterday, saying that he was told that it will, for the nerves in his face to regenerate, I think it's like, I forgot what he said. I just closed the blog. But basically, it's going to take a little while for those nerves in his face to regenerate themselves. It may be 3 or 4 months before he's back on TV, if he even comes back to TV. You know, JR keeps talking in these blogs about how he doesn't miss the travel, and, you know, if I'm not put back on TV, then so be it. Maybe it's for the better. I think JR wants to announce, but if WWE came back at him and said, look, we have a different position for you, he wouldn't fight it. I almost feel like, not that he's given up on the idea of announcing, but, you know, if I'm Jim Ross and I really, really, really want to announce, and that's my passion, and I don't want to be doing anything else. I mean, he does do other things for the company. I think he still handles payroll, in fact. But if I'm him, because I know Vince McMahon and the people in WWE do read my blog, then I don't go on there and talk about it like I don't give a shit and be like, well, you know, hey, if I'm not announcing anymore, it's not a big deal to me. There's more important things in life. So I think that attitude that he's taken is quite interesting. But whenever he's ready to come back, he'll come back and do whatever they ask of him. And I guess facially, he won't be ready to be back on camera for at least another 3 or 4 months. So I guess at this point, we can just hope that JR is back in time for WrestleMania. Because if we're stuck with the likes of you know, Todd Grisham and Matt Stryker, who, you know, they're serviceable, but they're no Jim Ross. So, you know, get well soon, JR. This past week, of course, was Veterans Day here in the United States on Wednesday. And big shout-out to all the vets. I know we have actually a whole bunch of them, I think, who listen to the podcast, one of whom is Ronnie the Rib, who I'm sure is listening to the show right now. Want to give him the shout-out that he asked for on Twitter. So there you go. Hopefully that makes your day. I spent part of my day on Wednesday at a VA hospital with a player from the New York Mets, and it was an interesting experience. And just, you know, and the reaction, of course, to seeing, you know, the Mets player was, you know, it was heartwarming in a way, I guess. You know, I mean, not everybody was a baseball fan, but they all knew who he was. And, you know, their faces lit up, and I had the chance to actually talk to some of these vets. I talked to somebody who was in Patton's army in World War II, which was amazing. And the person in the bed next to him was actually in the Korean War, and the person in the room next to them was in the Vietnam War. So it was almost like, you know, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, all in succession. And, you know, alive and kicking and doing well. And, you know, God bless him. It was a great experience, and, you know, what more can I say? It was something I won't soon forget. Now, another message I got on Twitter, and I've had other people ask me about this, concerns a comment that I made in the podcast a couple weeks ago. I had mentioned that I would be going to the movies with my friend's girlfriend, and I don't think I gave much of an explanation there. And although I did mention it's not as salacious as it sounded, and people have been emailing me or Twittering me, oh, you got to follow up. What happened? Well, what happened was that nothing happened. Unfortunately, I got sick, as you may recall. I had pneumonia, which I actually just came back from the doctor's office a short time ago for a follow-up x-ray, which, you know, checked out clean. But I had pneumonia, of course. First time I had been sick since January. And I mean, like, really sick. And that was really the only week that was going to work for her. So, unfortunately, we never did make it to the movies to see Zombieland. So, I still haven't seen the film. But, yeah, nothing happened. Who's to say what would have happened, though, had things gone down differently? But, yeah, I wish I had more exciting news for you. But not to be. Sorry. So, there you go. And I think that about covers it for... hold on a second here. Sorry about that. I think that covers all the major news for this week. So why don't we break into the mailbag here, which is just ballooned to obese proportions here. So let's shed some of that weight here from the mailbag, if we will. Start backwards here, work our way back down to some of the older letters. Adam writes, "Dear Solomonster, was watching a clip with Alexis Lerae, who of course is the current Mickie James, and Jeff Jarrett in TNA, and was somewhat confused. I don't really watch TNA, so I don't know any of the storylines, but I was wondering if you knew what went on before this clip," and he includes a YouTube clip, "to make it culminate with Jeff Jarrett attacking a woman with a garbage can." I actually do not know. That's the short answer. I watched the clip, and without any context to it, and quite frankly, I think even if I did have context to it, but without any context, it's actually quite disturbing. You know, man-on-woman violence is something that we used to see quite often, probably more often than we really should have in WWE anyway, let alone TNA. And with the product being as toned down as it is, you don't see it anymore. It's kind of like not having blood. When you actually see blood, you notice it, and it means more. And because we don't really see this sort of thing anymore, I watched this clip, and Jarrett just beats the crap out of Mickie James. I mean, he throws her into a wall. He hits her in the head with a garbage can. He throws her into a chair that's sitting there, bashes her face into it, takes her outside the arena, and throws her into the side of a car, body slams her into the back of a pickup truck. I have no fucking clue what's going on in this clip, but it's actually quite disturbing to watch. So maybe somebody else can shed some light on that. But I'm certainly more of a TNA fan now than I was back when that segment probably took place, which I'm going to guess was probably in 2002 or 2003. Maybe even 04, but Mickie James came into WWE, would have been late 05, early 06, is when she made her TV debut, so she probably was in OVW in 04, maybe in 05, so it had to be before that, so I have no idea. It's a question from Matt in Lakeland, Florida. Dear Solomonster, stumbled onto your podcast 3 months ago, big fan, I appreciate that. What is the beef with Jeff Jarrett and Vince McMahon? I know there's obviously a real issue there, but I never heard what happened. Thanks in advance. Well, the issue stems from when Jarrett was last in WWE, which would have been 1999. Jarrett was the Intercontinental Champion at the time and was engaged in a feud with China. Ironically, yet another situation where Jeff Jarrett is involved in man-on-woman violence. I see a pattern developing here. Anyway, this is just a coincidence, by the way. Pure coincidence, I received these two questions back-to-back from different people. Jarrett was going into a pay-per-view match in October of 99, which would have been the No Mercy pay-per-view. It was going to be Jarrett against China in a good housekeeping match for the title. And Jarrett's contract was either up, I believe it had just expired. They allowed the contract to lapse, and it was an oversight. Jim Ross was the head of talent relations at the time, and for whatever the reason was, allowed the contract to expire. So Jarrett came to the show, and he was not contractually bound to do anything that he didn't want to do. And long story short, he held Vince McMahon and WWE up for something like $250,000 in order to drop the belt. And they paid him. They paid Jarrett the money. He lost to China that night. China became the Intercontinental Champion, and that was it. And Vince McMahon and Jarrett have no love lost between one another since that time. Jim Ross has his own version of what happened, because there's heat between Jim Ross and Jarrett as well, stemming from that incident. But that's basically the story there. Jarrett held him up for money. They allowed his contract to expire, and WWE shot themselves in the foot, essentially, by putting themselves in that position in the first place with a guy that had one of their belts. And Jarrett demanded the money. He got the money, lost the belt, left, and never came back. So there you go. Lee writes in, Dear Solomonster, what do you think of WWE reducing the number of pay-per-views from 15 per year to 13 as of 2010? I think it's a good idea. WWE is eliminating one more pay-per-view show. They've eliminated some shows before. You know, they eliminated that New Year's Revolution show a couple years ago, and they've now officially done away with Cyber Sunday, which is years overdue because that concept failed from the very beginning when it was Taboo Tuesday. So that show is gone, and they've eliminated one other pay-per-view if you look at the lineup. They've reshuffled a couple around. Rumble is in January. No Way Out in February is now the Elimination Chamber. Actually, it's not even the, it's just Elimination Chamber, which is the dumbest possible name. March, April is usually WrestleMania. Late April is still Backlash. May, I believe now, is... I don't remember. I had the list in front of me. This goddamn web browser closed on me, and all these links I had open are gone, so forgive me. But I know the Bash is still on the lineup. It got moved around. Maybe the Bash now is in May. It's either May or July. Night of Champions, maybe. No, Night of Champions, I believe, now is in September. Breaking Point, which used to be Unforgiven. But Breaking Point, which was the submission-only pay-per-view, is the one that was done away with. It did just horrible numbers, and so they eliminated it. So now we have 13 shows. It's still at least one show more than it should be. We have two pay-per-views still in October. Hell in a Cell at the beginning of the month and Bragging Rights at the end. I don't understand why you need two pay-per-views in October. So they should still do away with one show and get it down to 12. I mean, in a perfect world, I don't think WWE should have more than six pay-per-views per year. And I think they should bring back the King of the Ring tournament and make it mean something. But I understand why. It's just they would be giving up a lot of money that they don't have to give up. They still make money off these shows, so why would you cut that number from 12 or 13 to 6? I get that. But it's a big improvement, because just a couple of years ago, I think they actually went as high as 16. I could be wrong. I think one year they had 16 pay-per-views in a single year, which is just way too many. So it's a step in the right direction. Luis writes in with one of his questions. Do you think the new Hogan DVD will have a limited run considering what has happened recently? Well, if the Hogan DVD wasn't already in production and about to be released, Vince McMahon would have killed it, but he couldn't. It was too late. So the Hogan DVD is coming out this Tuesday, and it looks pretty good, if you're a Hogan fan anyway. But there's a whole bunch of unreleased matches on there, including a house show match, I believe, from the Boston Garden in 88 between Hogan and Rick Rude. Now, I'm not aware of too many Hulk Hogan-Rick Rude matches, so it's got some rare matches on there and some that aren't so rare, but there was really nothing Vince McMahon could do about it. From what I understand, from what I've read, they're going to be very low-key with it. They've already started advertising it on TV, and they may run a crawl on the bottom of the screen and that sort of thing, but they're not going to go overboard with a promotion for it. They're just going to let the DVD come out, do the bare bones level of promotion that they could do, and then when Hogan comes back, and let's face it, Hogan will at some point come back to WWE, even if it isn't for a couple of years, but when he comes back and he's done with, or at least when he's done with TNA, and there are people who already think Hogan's taking TNA for a ride, and you know, like he did last time he supposedly was coming into TNA. That, of course, remains to be seen, but when he is done with TNA and comes back, they'll do a re-release of sorts, and they'll promote it at that time. So at least that was the plan as of a week ago. Let's see. Paul sent me a message asking me if I see Undertaker and Kane teaming up. That was before SmackDown. Now he's wondering if Kane will be added to the World Heavyweight title match at Survivor Series. Anything's possible with this crew here, but I don't think so. I think they're keeping the triple threat dynamic for both the Raw and SmackDown main events. You know, Undertaker and Kane as a team against Jericho for the tag team titles is something I could see. But, you know, if Undertaker is the World Heavyweight Champion, then why would you put him in a tag team title feud? So, if it's going to happen, I don't see it happening right away. Just the fact that they're teasing, or I guess on SmackDown, Kane came out to save Undertaker. Again, I haven't watched the match yet, but just the fact that apparently Undertaker and Kane are allies of sorts means... You know what that means. I mean, it just means that Kane is going to turn on him at some point. I mean, it's wrestling. It's a WWE booking, classic Vince Russo-type booking 101 when it comes to Kane and The Undertaker. So, you know, Kane being added to the match of Survivor Series, I don't think so. He could interfere. I think Kane it doesn't have a spot on the show as of right now, so maybe he'd interfere. But as far as making it like a fatal four-way, I just don't see that happening. Ash from Australia writes in, just wondering, Solomonster, if the 100th episode of the Sound Off, when it will be taking place. Could it possibly be around WrestleMania 26 weekend? It would be a good milestone to reach, it seems, as it would be WrestleMania weekend. Do you have a specific date for it? I do not. And it's hard to predict because I will miss a weekend every now and then. You know, I think I've been doing pretty good. I missed last weekend, but a couple weeks ago I had three shows in one week. It varies based on my schedule. If I hit every single weekend between now and then, I think Sound Off 100 would probably come sometime in February. Maybe if I miss a week, it might be early March. Either way, it'll probably be before WrestleMania. So, I could try to time it for WrestleMania and skip a whole bunch of weeks, but I don't think people would like that if I did that on purpose. So just stay tuned and find out, I guess. Second part of his question, when will Ted DiBiase be turning face, if at all? There's only 1 month left before his DVD, The Marine 2, comes out. And I don't think WWE can make DiBiase that much of a top babyface. What are your thoughts? I mean, long term, they could certainly make him a big babyface. I think, you know, there were a couple weeks ago on Raw where that really, really good angle between DiBiase and Randy Orton. And then they just completely dropped the ball on it. They never acknowledged it. they didn't follow up on it at all, which leads me to believe that perhaps there'll be something, some angle that goes down at Survivor Series, maybe where DiBiase is gets pissed off because something that Orton does leads to him being eliminated, or maybe Orton gets eliminated because DiBiase made a mistake, and then it, you know, maybe on Raw the next night, they shoot a big angle, if not at the pay-per-view. I don't know. But the plan all along has been for DiBiase to go face before the Marine 2 comes out, and it comes out next month, and they don't have a lot of time left, so we'll see what happens. If anything's going to happen, my guess would be it's going to happen, if not at Survivor Series and on that 3-hour Raw the next night. Jonathan writes in, "Dear Solemn Monster, how do you think Kane can be used effectively, rather than have him feuding pointlessly with the awful Great Khali or switching him from babyface to tweener to heel every other week? Do you think he should be in the title picture or a main event feud again? I love the big guy, great to watch, great on the mic, and the best uppercut around." I am a Kane supporter as well. And having said that, his main event days are behind him, and we just need to accept that. Not that he couldn't go in a main event, although he is slower of late than he has been in the past, but we just know that WWE does not see him as a main event player like that anymore. It's not going to happen. He'll be in a main event every now and then, but as far as being a sustained main eventer or in a title feud, unless it's on ECW or something, which of course means jack shit to begin with, it's not going to happen. And so, you know, look, he works best as an unstoppable monster, okay, akin to his original character, or even his character from 2003, right after he unmasked and he walked around with the towel on his head, okay? Those were the times that Kane was booked the best. And I'm a big fan of resuming the Undertaker-Kane storyline if they've got nothing else for him. Perhaps even, and this was an idea I had years ago, and people laughed at me. Friends of mine laughed at me. But I don't know. I always thought it would be interesting if they introduced a Sister of Destruction. I know it's completely unbelievable and implausible, but the whole backstory of Kane and The Undertaker, what it's degenerated into, just Kane's own backstory is completely implausible. At least at the beginning, it was potentially believable. You know, here are these two kids, they grew up together, and one burned down the funeral home, and blah, 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 blah. And, of course, they tried to make it even more complicated, and that's when it all went straight to hell. But, you know, I think if they have a female in mind for the role, and for some reason I think Daphne from TNA would be perfect in this role, but, you know, reintroduce Paul Bearer, have him come back and reveal that there's a sister somewhere, and just go with it. Just see what comes out of it. I don't know. It's something for him to do. Obviously, you know, as long as The Undertaker is world champion, he's not going to be involved in anything like that. But anyway, there you go. That would be my idea. I had a couple of people ask me about the William Regal Christian match on ECW, my thoughts on that. And, I thought it was a good match. It wasn't the greatest match I've ever seen. I really think they dropped the ball on this. I know Regal is a heel, and so him, just because it was his homeland in the UK doesn't mean he should have won the belt, but this feud has been going on long enough, and Regal has fought his way back into title contention, and it was the UK, and I just think if there was ever a place for it to happen, that was it. That was the time for Regal to win the ECW title, and the babyface always works better chasing the heel. Christian's been champion for a long time. Of all the champions, believe it or not, in WWE, Christian is probably the best-booked champion of them all. And I just thought it was the perfect time to take the title off him, put it on Regal, and have Christian either move on to SmackDown or Raw, or if you're going to keep him in ECW, fine, have him chase Regal for the belt. I think it was just the right time, and they didn't do it, and that's it. Because when are you going to put the title on Regal now? It's kind of like Dolph Ziggler on SmackDown. How many fucking title matches can you possibly give somebody? Now we've got a Morrison-Ziggler 2 out of 3 falls match for the belt next week. If Dolph Ziggler wins the Intercontinental Championship, who is going to give a shit about Dolph Ziggler? The man has lost 6 or 7 straight title matches now. I mean, it's like Batista, who got title matches on pay-per-view seemingly every month for 3 or 4 years straight. It's not that impressive if you lose all of your matches and then you finally win one, because at some point, even I can become world heavyweight champion. If you put me in the ring with one of their main eventers, I will lose 9 times out of 10. Maybe I'll get lucky once. Maybe I'll throw some salt in someone's face and pin them. And who the fuck cares if I win the belt then? Because I lost 10 times. What does one victory mean? They give these guys title matches. You know, here's the thing. It's kind of like ass backwards booking logic in WWE. When you lose a match in WWE, you automatically become the number one contender. That's what I've learned over the last couple of months. If I was in WWE, I would gladly job to everybody. I will job to every main event guy because I will simply be able to come back and get a title match. However, if you defeat the champion, see Mark Henry, for example, that first night he came into Raw, he beat Randy Orton clean. He pinned him with a World's Strongest Slam in the middle of the ring. How did they follow up on that? They didn't. They put Mark Henry in the ring with Cody Rhodes a week later, and that was it. Now he's teaming with MVP. Now, Mark Henry fought Randy Orton on Raw this past week and lost, but they never followed up on that first victory. It's frustrating. I think we all take it way too seriously. Maybe if we looked at it for what it is, which is a joke, everything is comedy to them after all, maybe we wouldn't be so uptight about these things. But I try to make sense of it, and when you can't make sense of something, it's frustrating, it's aggravating. It's just human nature. But that's WWE for you. That's just the way it is. David writes in with a TNA scenario here. He prefaces it by saying that in no way does he believe this will ever actually happen. But let's say over 6 months from now, or maybe a year even, WWE's viewership drops even more dramatically. And with TNA's acquisition of Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff, perhaps even RVD and others that have been rumored, like Ric Flair and Goldberg, TNA Impact actually begins exceeding Raw in the ratings, and their pay-per-view buy rates are killing WWE's. Where does TNA go from there? Do you believe they would even know how to properly market themselves as being anything other than an alternative wrestling organization to World Wrestling Entertainment? Even if they did beat WWE in the ratings and such, how long could they pull it off for? Not very long. TNA does not have the infrastructure in place. They've proven that time and time again. They put these house shows on. They go all over the country now with these house shows that they do such a piss-poor job of promoting that they pull crowds that are less than your typical indie show. I mean, Ring of Honor is routinely creaming TNA in that department. And that's saying something because Ring of Honor is not at its peak strength right now. But they can pull crowds of 500, 600, 700, 800 people, even sometimes over 1,000 for some of their shows. TNA did a whole bunch of house shows recently that barely pulled in 200 or 300 people in some places. Now, the guys go out there and they bust their asses, and they should be commended for that. But that's on TNA. I mean, they could be doing a much, much, much better job of promoting themselves and promoting their shows. If by some chance they actually were in that position where they were beating WWE, and it will never happen. It will never happen. Ever happen. But if it did, I don't think they would know what to do. They'd be all happy and excited, and then, you know, it would die a horrible death because they wouldn't know how to follow up on it. And that's the shameful part of it. And you need not look any further than their decision to keep Vince Russo in power and bring in Ed Ferrara and get rid of guys like Jim Cornette and such. That's the mentality they have. What worked 10 years ago has got to work now. And yeah, they'll sustain their 1.0 or 1.1 rating every week, but they're not going to do any better. You know, when Hulk Hogan comes in, and right now the talk is that Hogan's first date where he actually may appear on TV and in the Impact Zone may be January 4th. January 4th is a Monday night. Now, I'm not sure if that means, and this is, again, something I read from a reliable source. You know, I don't know if that means that TNA would be taping their Impact show as they usually do on a Monday night to air that Thursday, or if they're planning some sort of live Monday night special on January 4th. But last I heard, that would probably be Hogan's first appearance on TV in some capacity. I don't think it's going to make a damn bit of difference. TNA, I think, would love to pop a 1.5, which would be their biggest rating ever. I'll be perfectly honest with you, I don't even know if they can do that. I mean, TNA has had some shows that they've promoted before, some live specials now and then and such. Or maybe they weren't live, but they've had shows in the past that they've promoted on Spike that you would think would easily pull in a 1.3, 1.4, 1.5, and they never do. They just never do. I don't really think that Hulk Hogan's first appearance is going to draw 1.5. I'm gonna call it right now. If I'm wrong, I'll be the first to admit it. And for TNA's sake, I hope I am wrong. And for Hulk Hogan's sake, and the sake of his own drawing power, at least the drawing power he thinks he still has, I hope I'm wrong, but I just don't see it happening. It, certainly the announcement of Hogan coming to TNA and you know, all that stuff they've been announcing on Impact every week has not made a damn bit of difference in the ratings. Maybe people are just waiting for Hogan to make an appearance and then they'll all tune in. I don't know, but I'm still optimistic that Hogan coming in and the changes that are supposedly being made are going to be for the better. But if they're putting all their ducks in a row, hoping for that miraculous 1.5 rating, which is just comical in and of itself, that would be the kind of the brass ring they would strive for is a 1.5 rating. They may be sorely disappointed come January 4th, if that is in fact when Hogan makes his first appearance. But I agree with David. His final synopsis is that the only thing that will ever kill WWE is WWE, and I think that is 110% correct. So that's my spiel. I don't think TNA would ever know what to do with themselves if they were ever in a situation like that. So anyway, David's birthday was on November 10th, a couple of days ago, so that was that was about a week ago now. So happy belated birthday to David. Glad I was able to mention your letter on the air. Trent writes in, I'd like to start Solid Monster by saying I understand that TVPG is for sponsors and whatnot, but correct me if I'm wrong, it's also because they want to aim the product at a younger audience. My question is, what 12-year-old kid gives a shit about the Osbournes, Donald Trump, or Tramp 1 or 2 from Entertainment Tonight? I'm just saying, if the product is aimed at a younger crowd, which obviously I don't approve of, what is Jeremy Piven and Dr. Ken doing there? What 12-year-old has watched Entourage or The Hangover, for that matter? Well, for the record, I actually do know some 12-year-olds that have watched The Hangover. I don't necessarily approve of it, but I do know that there are plenty of 12-year-olds that have seen The Hangover. Anyway, Trent says, I'm just saying, not like you didn't already know this, but Vince McMahon has downs, whatever that means. What are your thoughts? Well, it's weird because clearly, in part because Linda McMahon is running for Senate, but even before Linda announced that she was running for Senate, they've gone in the more PG direction. That's the way they want to take their product, and that's their prerogative. I don't necessarily approve of that either. But it makes you wonder when Triple H comes out on Raw a week ago or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, and is making very subtle jokes about masturbation. And, like, beating off or whacking off, spitting and swallowing, and all these little subtle digs that DX gets in there that nobody else would be allowed to get away with. And granted, it probably goes over the heads of a lot of the younger kids, but I can't possibly be the only one made a little uncomfortable whenever that happens. You know, it's like they're having an identity crisis. They don't know which way to go. They want to be everything to everybody, and you can't be everything to everybody. It's just not possible. You're either for kids or you have a more edgy or adult-oriented product. And if you're going to be more towards kids, you can't be cracking masturbation jokes on TV. It's just not right. So I agree. So that's going to do it. We'll cinch up the old mailbag here. I think we tackled a lot of your questions. As always, you can write into thesolomonster@gmail.com. Find me on Twitter, twitter.com/solomonster. Leave me a reply there if you want to. The Sound Off should also be back up on iTunes now, in the iTunes store. If you want to get it there, subscribe so it'll be automatically delivered to you whenever a new show is posted. It's kind of cool. And I want to thank each and every one of you for listening to Sound Off 89 and every Sound Off before 89. This is the 2-year anniversary of the Sound Off. I believe it actually was a week or so ago, but nonetheless, it was 2 years ago this month that I began doing the show for my good friend, the webmaster of SEScoops.com, and it was only supposed to be a temporary thing, and well, 2 years later, I'm still doing it, and I enjoy it every bit as much now as I did then, if not more so. I've built quite a little audience for myself, and I really do appreciate your loyalty, and whenever you send in any positive comments, and even negative comments, I mean, any feedback is good to get, but anytime anybody writes in with you know, an email saying how much it makes their week to listen to the show, or, you know, they look at it as audio crack and all these crazy things I've heard, it really makes me feel good and keeps me going because, you know, it's not like I get paid for this gig. I do it because I enjoy doing it. And when the day comes that I don't enjoy doing it anymore, I won't do it. It's as simple as that. But, just about 90 episodes in and I couldn't be happier. And I hope you all, stay with me for the ride, and hopefully we have at least another 90 more episodes to talk about. So hopefully we will be back next weekend. It may be a little touch and go. It is my mother's birthday. It's my best friend's girlfriend's birthday. There's a lot of shit going on next weekend. That, of course, is just before Thanksgiving. if not next weekend, then sometime that week, when I have off for the holidays, there will be another Sound Off. So just tune in and stick around for that. Until next time, be well, stay safe. Enjoy the TNA Turning Point pay-per-view later tonight. I understand that I neglected to mention the pay-per-view earlier, but there was just so much to get to, I just didn't have time for it. But if you do check it out, enjoy it, and we will see you right back here next week. Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to The Sama Monster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing.
Anybody agree with me out there?
I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business.
On SE Scoops.